Tonight, the title is Women, Hunger, and Peace.
One of the things that we emphasize in our presentations, and if you've been here before, this will be repetitious. We emphasize, number one, hunger exists, which we all know. Number two, it doesn't need to. We have lots of solutions. We have enough technology, we have enough resources. What's lacking is individual will to do something about it. And the third ingredient of what we're presenting is that we're the key to ending it. That, you know, the buck kind of stops with us, that it's not your next door neighbor who's going to do it or the guy down the street, but that it's all of us who care enough to do something. So in all of our sessions also, we like to emphasize what opportunities there are for action for everyone. And there's some things on the board that we'll talk about in a little bit.
One of the things that we want to maybe talk about just in terms of an introduction is that really when we started out, we thought about this session as being women and hunger, because we've been talking about hunger. And then it fell right on Hiroshima Day. And the start of our prayer vigil here in the village. And rather than really having this session be all about peace, what we want to do is just point out how interconnected these issues are. And that's why I'm wearing the t-shirt that I'm wearing. And in fact, I found I was in very good, just so you can all see what it says. I'm in very good company because I was up at the Resource Center and I saw there's a picture of Ruth Youngdahl up there, and she had a sweatshirt on with the same words. And I'm sure it's very apparent the interconnectedness of all of this. What's maybe not so apparent is the interconnectedness of women's rights, and we'll try and address that somewhat. And we're going to be looking at a video that's put out by one of the agencies of the UN called the International Federation for Agricultural Development. It's the smallest agency of the UN, and wouldn't you know, it's the best. That is, it's the most efficient, and it really delivers to the needs of the poor people around the world. And it's about a bank in Bangladesh called the Grameen Bank, which really delivers grassroots support and credit for the poor people there, and particularly through a women's group. But the way peace comes in are in many ways. Can anyone just think of a connection? I mean, what does ending hunger have to do with peace? Anyone have an idea or see a connection? Anyone else see a connection? Like, I saw a connection in the dining hall tonight in our family. That is, our two-year-old, I don't know if any of you were sitting around us, but he was very vocal and crabby, and it was one of those kind of meals where he couldn't quite turn the corner and start enjoying his meal. He was just going to be hungry throughout the meal, and when he was hungry, he was not at all peaceful. You really need to start with peace in the home unit, and it builds to the community, and it builds to the nation, and it builds nationwide. And obviously, if people are oppressed, if people are denied the basic rights of man, that is food and a real right to life.
I said the basic rights of man.
Of people, excuse me. It creeps
it's
right
a long
in, doesn't
place
it?
To use explicitly.
I'm the only man in the room, too. That obviously is going to be inconsistent with a peaceful existence. So you may just want to look for yourself to see these connections between hunger and peace as we go along, but our presentation mostly will be about women and ending hunger, and in particular tonight about foreign aid and about the kinds of things that can be done in terms of supplying credit to the poor people.
We wanted to share a couple of anecdotes and then just some statistics about women in developing countries. We've traveled to a few developing countries, and we began noticing things that we didn't have any, you know, factual basis for. One was that in Bolivia and Peru, we never saw men. We saw the women out on the streets selling. We saw the women carrying the children. We saw the women selling their little cookies and cakes. And we kept, it just became kind of a joke for us. Where were the men? When we were in Peru, we stayed with a peasant family, and we kept asking where the husband was. And they continually said, otra casa, which we know very little Spanish, but we knew somehow that meant other house. And basically they had, you know, as many wives as they wanted, and they didn't have to, you know, they had no responsibility to one particular family unit. A lot of people knew. We were in southern India, and in one city alone in Bangalore, and this is just one city in India, there's at least one dowry brain a day. And what it is, although they're illegal, basically if a husband feels that the dowry that the woman has brought to the marriage is inadequate or insufficient in any way, he douses her sari with kerosene and sets her on fire. And of course, you know how they're, you know, they can't escape. And in Bangalore alone, there's at least one a day.
And so, Bangalore was only a town of 300,000, about the size of Minneapolis.
That in itself says something fairly profound about women's rights and men's rights and what those balances are, that no one does, you know, a great deal to stop it. You know, it just continues to go on.
There's something in this country, you know, the women's rights movement is really just getting momentum and just in its infancy. But the comparison to the developing world, that women are treated very, very poorly. I was at an international human rights conference, and a woman lawyer from Pakistan was telling us something about their system there. A woman's testimony, you need two women to testify in court to equal one man on any topic. The penalty in Pakistan under the Muslim laws for fornication for a woman, if there are four men witnesses to the fornication, and fornication is almost laughed off the books in this country, it's, you know, and never prosecuted in Minnesota, is death by stoning. And, you know, some of those things that just, you know, there are still women sold in Pakistan. It's illegal now, but they are actually sold into marriage and things like that. So, I mean, we don't have much of a concept as to what an issue women's rights really is. Do you have some things from India?
Yeah.
Maybe you could, Ricky's going to mention a couple facts about women in India. If you open up in this newspaper we've passed out, it's got some real good summaries in the center page, kind of the center fold-out. I think it's got some facts and figures that show that until women are really liberated around the world, at least on some minimal levels, that we'll never be able to really attack large issues. If you look at up in the upper right-hand corner, for instance, under that chart where it says, did you know, women are 50% of the population, obviously. They have a third of the official labor force. They earn only 10% of the world's income, and they own 1% of the world's property. Even though, if you look at that little bar chart next to it, I mean, they do, in Africa, that's concerning Africa, they do almost everything. Most of the agricultural work, all of the child care, 70% growing food, 100% of the food processing, I think it says there. So they do a tremendous amount of the work, have a tremendous amount of responsibility. Another thing that really struck me was under Did You Know, it says 600 million of the 800 million illiterate people in the world are women. And so they've really been denied adequate education in huge numbers.
As you look at the pictures and the little drawings and the statistics, is there anything that particularly strikes you or something that you didn't know or confirms what you did know that you'd like to share? you get some up there?
Oh, over here.
Oh, good. Thanks. Anything you'd like to mention that... Go ahead.
It looks like if we're going to live longer in spite of it, even if they work harder than they have. Or they're going to live longer than we have. Even there.
It's not true in all, there's in India that's not the case, but yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
Well, I just think education and fertility, those statistics are so interesting. Even in America, in the United States, do you know what group, I found this so interesting, what group of women has the lowest fertility rate in the United States?
Go ahead.
It's college educated black women.
Oh.
You know,
Which
goes against so much of our stereotype.
Thanks for sharing that. I didn't know that.
I think there was a big case in Kenya last year, about the government executive who died, and he had chosen to leave his family clan very, very early on, like 25 years ago. And he and his wife were European educated and come back to Kenya and been in the service of the country. And when he died, she wanted him, they planned that he would be buried somewhere near where they lived or something in Nairobi. Or near Nairobi, and his clan's people brought a court suit for him to be buried back in his own ethnic land. And she had absolutely no say on it. Even though he and his wife, I mean, they decided together. And his body was taken back to his land. Even in a country that is worth, I guess I think of Kenya as working so hard to try to do something with women, give women some say. I mean, this woman was a part of the cabinet or something. I don't remember all the exact details, but just couldn't get over that. Now because she and her husband were from a different ethnic group, she had absolutely no say. And the courts ruled it thus. And so... Even for an educated woman,
it's real hard for us to even imagine, you know. We wanted to share a few facts just from India, where different from in Africa, where a woman's life expectancy is less than men, and the infant mortality rate is even higher for female babies. It's like 100. Mortality rate is how many deaths per 1,000 children born, how many die in the first year of life. Okay, so for girl babies it's 130 per 1,000, and for little boys it's 121, both of which is pretty terrible. The eating habits were, this was real disturbing to me, when Indian families eat, the boys and men receive the choicest portions and get to eat first. The little boys eat second, children. And then third and the worst portions go to the women, even if they're pregnant and or nursing. So when you're talking about perpetuating cycles of, you know, poverty and, you know, poor development, all that stuff, I mean, you can just see it, the cycles continuing. Again, you know, the women do almost all the work. They do the household tasks, they fetch the water, which sometimes means walking 5 or 6 miles just to get, you know, a bucket of water. 90% of the female workers earn wages as low as $20 a month, and they average 40% less than those of men. 3/4 of Indian women are illiterate compared to 50% of men illiterate in India.
It's real crucial, women's part in ending hunger and building the health of the family and nutrition and things like that, just because of some of those facts too, looking at the flip side, because they are doing the care of the children when they're sick. For instance, we did a session last week on oral rehydration therapy. And so the women have to have some education and some respect and some important role. Now, they can't be constantly discriminated against because it's up to them to like make sure the water's clean so the kids aren't getting diarrhea. It's up to them to give the medicines to the kid or to give the oral rehydration therapy things to the children. I mean, it's 50% of the people, and so liberation of women is really crucial to ending hunger. It's a very crucial issue. Well, the Grameen Bank has been a spectacular success. I think, you know, women in that society are learned. Did you see one cover her face there when the camera came on her? They're learned to be very subservient and shy. So it might have taken a little urging to get her to, you know, open up her house to a camera. Then everyone's going to know a camera is in her house. You know, they all live right together. And she's worried about what will happen to her afterwards and a million other things. So they're probably telling her what topic to go to next or something. Yeah, I heard some murmuring. But it's really been a spectacular success for the people, you can see. You see the looks on their faces when they, like, got that rice machine when the camera was on them? I mean, they were so pleased that they were able to do. Kind of reminds me of the looks of one of these women mavericks here. Is there, you know, doing something that feels real good.
How long has this been going
on? I don't know. I've got some particulars here, but it's been quite a while.
This,
I mean, it's established.
Example of them doing something for themselves, yeah, rather than some outside help coming in.
I was really interested that it was Islamic faith. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, thing. My first thing was, well, you go to these countries and their religion tells them that the women are no good, and you're going to have to. How can you work with someone when their religion says that? And how can you have somebody change the religion? But when they got the money, it didn't seem it mattered.
That's a good point.
Clothing, and all of a sudden, it was changing, and their situation, the women's situation, changed like that. And I don't think it would have changed in any other way. I couldn't see it happening.
That's a good point.
I like the idea too that they formed groups for this woman because I think that there was support there, then they could support each other.
I wonder if this has been tried anyplace else.
That's the next point.
The idea,
that's a perfect time for you to mention it. This is an organization. There's two other points we want to make about this credit. And, you know, when you think of credit, you think about big loans and applications. And you're talking about $50. But these people are earning in a year, you know, maybe $150, $250. So $50 is a sizable loan for them. And the women that Ricky and I saw as we went to some of the other countries are always the ones you see running the little businesses. They're called micro businesses. They're always sitting out in the street trying to sell something. You never see the men. And this organization, FINCA, it stands for Foundation for International Community Assistance. And it's starting the same thing in Latin America. And so we just put down the address here. And they have had some successes. They've made 32,000 loans so far. It's all Latin America that it's oriented in. In 600 different villages, and their repayment rate is 97%. And it's the same kind of idea. It's the very small loans to the small businesses, to the poorest, to the poor. If we have time to go through foreign aid, you'll see that's the biggest problem with our foreign aid is it doesn't get to the poorest, to the poor. You know, it stays stuck in the government, or there's corruption problems, or it goes to the large landowners, or the already vested interests. And as a result of the success of these two groups, there now has been a bill and that has been proposed in both the House and the Senate. And you have the name of it, honey?
The Microenterprise Loans for the Poor. That's all I have.
Right. And
that's the name.
Yeah, and those are the House numbers and the file numbers.
So if you're interested, the marker wasn't writing very well, sorry. But and those are the senators who are supporting the bill. So if you're interested in, you know, just writing to your congresspeople, that's a good one to write to.
if you're, you know, interested in these kinds of issues in the United States, that's the issue that Bread for the World is dealing with right now. It's called WIC, WIC, Women, Infants, and Children. And it's designed to give poor women, infants, and children more food, better nutrition to, again, you know, break the cycles. So that's another, you know, joining Bread for the World is an excellent opportunity for involvement. Yeah?
I was just going to say, the program in the United States, maybe they do have education somewhere, but I have seen my father-in-law owns a farm in Kentucky, and some people were living in this house and take care of the farm, and they were on this program for her and the children, and they threw out so much of food, and I mean milk, cheese.
Do you know why or what was going on?
That was the way it was there. The way they were brought up, but the eating habits. And, you know, maybe there is more education in that, but it did not reach her. Yeah. I mean, they gave my father-in-law food and said, here, we're just going to throw it out. Their babies would go around with Coke in their bottles.
Yeah, that's always, those issues are always problems. It even gets worse when we start shipping things to other countries where people end up using, you know, powdered milk for paint because they have a lactose intolerance where we're, you know, but, you know, hopefully it would reach enough people that it would be worthwhile.
There's a substantial debate that you should know about these bills right now. They would be administered by USAID, the Agency for International Development. USAID doesn't want the criteria in the bill to require them to make tiny loans only to the poorest people. They want to give out bigger loans and not have too many constraints on what is the definition of absolute poverty. And so they want to have it go to different countries, and it's because it makes their job easier. It's a tough job if you have a lot of $50 loans and you're dealing with the poorest of the poor. They don't have mailboxes, they don't have all sorts of things. But it's a real cop-out because then the money, again, doesn't get down there. And so these two, this senator and this representative, who are sponsors of these proposals, are aware of those things. There are some other groups that are aware of them. And so it would be real important to get support for those. They're asking for $50 million for fiscal year 88 and $75 million for fiscal year 89. And you can imagine, you know, if these kind of micro loans were made to people and it became effective in those sorts of sums, what an impact that could have on all of those people's lives. And so support there could be real crucial. And the government's basically trying to get out of it by changing the definition of, you know, the criteria they have for the loans.
We're talking about the Wake Forest in Alberta during the pregnancy. And I didn't realize that the MX missile proposal asked for the same amount of money as the WIC program for all of the mothers and children in the United States. I mean, if one, the MX missile is the same amount of money.
Which ties in peace and, you know, it always ties to peace. Yeah.
I looked before I came over, and just in terms of dollars, and for if there were $6 billion to the child survival revolution for immunization and those sorts of things, they estimate that they could save 20,000 children's lives a day. You know, more than half of the starvation and health problems a day. $6 billion, that would be a year worldwide. They spend $800 billion on military, you know, all around the world, all the different governments and stuff like that. So $6 billion as compared to $800 billion. Just, it's staggering.
Do we have the sheets on the on aid corner?
Yeah.
Pass them out.
A couple of things, you know, as we go through these issues, we sort of get to the point about, well, if we don't do anything, at least our government's taking care of it in terms of foreign aid. There are a couple of sheets here that go together that make some points about foreign aid. And the real truth about foreign aid is that the objective is, even stated by the government, it's it's to use foreign aid to achieve our national interests. And so again, it's used as a political tool. The greatest example of that is the biggest receiver of foreign aid far and away is Israel. I mean, can you believe that? Israel and Egypt get a third of all the foreign aid. You have a list of the 10 top aid recipients and the 10 top poorest countries. Bangladesh is the only one that's on both lists. In other words, the other 9 countries that we give to in the largest proportions are not the poorest countries. And Israel, far and away, gets the most money of anyone. And of course, it's not a poor country at all. It's for strategic reasons, for military reasons, for political reasons. The foreign aid is broken down into basically 4 areas. One is military, that's 41%. So that doesn't address the kind of thing we're concerned with here, poverty and hunger by the poor. The next is out of economic aid, that's broken down into basically 3 areas. It's called economic support funds, the government calls them, development assistance funds, and food. And then there's 1% for the Peace Corps. Well, economic support funds can be used in the country as they see fit. And so what they can really use it for something that'll free up other of their funds for political or military uses. The development assistance funds go for things like roads, dams, communications, large, massive kinds of projects. Those projects normally benefit, again, you know, the large landowners, the well-to-do, the middle-class people. So they're not getting down to the poorest of the poor. Also, many of those funds are tied to purchases in the United States. So the money just doesn't go to like Bangladesh. The money goes to different groups in the United States, which buys things and then ships them over there. So instead of building, say, their manufacturing facilities, it's benefiting the United States. The other thing about development funds is they are oriented almost exclusively to the training of men, to the exclusion of women. And that leaves us with the food funds, which is 12% of the aid package. And the food funds are a problem for a couple of reasons. Number one, it undercuts the prices of commodities there in the country, so it discourages their local growers from continuing to grow. Number two, it changes the taste in the country. I mean, we send wheat to an African country that doesn't grow any wheat, and it undermines the market for whatever their staple is. And number three, we usually sell it to them at low rates, and so they will turn around and sell it. And of course, if they're selling it, the people we're seeing here, the poorest of the poor, can't afford it. It's the urban middle class then that buy a lot of the food things that go. So foreign aid really is not a substitute at all for self-sufficiency of the people.
Almost
20. Do you want to mention about foreign aid? Sri Lanka.
Oh, yeah, maybe we should just, the last thing we have to say is, we had a, when we were in Sri Lanka at the Human Rights Conference, when we got to our hotel room, which was a 4-star hotel, which was a little surprising to us to start with, we each received a little envelope, and on the front it just, you know, had our names and then said a small token. And we opened the envelopes, and it was in rupees, but it was each $75 U.S. Now you have to figure that the average income in Sri Lanka per year is 350 U.S. And this was from the people who were hosting the conference, the Sri Lankan government. But the money for the conference had been given to the Sri Lankan government by USAID. Mm-hmm. So we were getting your taxpayers' money for this little slush fund, and we gave it to, we have a sponsored, Save the Children sponsored child, and we gave it back, you know, into the country to use to buy her sewing machine. But you get the point. So it's kind of a strange experience. And I think the bell will probably ring in just a minute. Do you have some more Anything you, anybody who wants to pick up any materials here or take multiple copies of anything or keep your handouts, that's great. Do you have any other comments? Yeah.
How much can we believe of the media and I know, you know, the story, particularly I think Ethiopia, where so much was donated, millions of dollars worth of food was given to help out the hunger problem, and then the politics and the government of the country were of the sense that it never reached the people. Is that a fact that this is true, or?
Some of it didn't reach the people, but we had a physician who was here, and he said, although that's always inevitable, he said, by and large, you know, there are problems because they have transportation problems, they have problems with corruption with the government, all sorts of things. By and large, he said it was a tremendous benefit, it was largely successful, and it saved millions of lives. And so the people that, like, there's a Reader's Digest article about, you know, all of the waste that someone wrote. There was waste. There's always going to be waste in those situations, but it was not of such proportions that it should stop us from giving. In other words, he said basically the relief was a tremendous aid and help.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
We will. Somebody else might take him down. So
the forum's in here at 9. Or and you can see us if you want, you know, names
you
and addresses too.
Right now,
well, I didn't bring anything else.
Oh, sure. We have a pen if you
want.
I guess we don't have a pen. I thought we
usually. Well, we'll come back.
Okay.
These are senators that are for us.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And we've got their phone numbers too.
But now shouldn't we write to our own senators too?
Sure.
But
yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And here are the phone numbers of those men's aides that are working right on the issue, right there in D.C.
Okay, let me check that.
Yeah, those letters are just invaluable.
Did you want these back?
No.
You can have them.
If you want them, you can keep them.
I don't want that. I can tell. Okay, today all I wanted to say was,
that's kind of disgusting. That's worse, you know?
We think we're just going to do cancer.
Oh.
And
what states are these guys from?
Just
the representative is from Ohio, and the senator is from Arizona.
Oh, the possibility is the
you don't have the
addresses.
You know,
I think you just said it to, like, you know, House of Representatives,
yeah.
Washington D.C.
So we're dealing with your own health.
Which,
yeah,
right.
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't have.
No, I meant from when I tried talking to my representative, it's good to be able to tell him what his.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Thank you. Here's your.
Oh, sure. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.